Good morning, Jen.
Good morning.
It's Tuesday.
Welcome to the Welcome to the What's the Temp podcast. My name is Bettina, and I am coming in hot.
My name is Jen, and I need to check in so I don't check out.
Good morning, my friend. Today's episode is called, I don't know what it is. What's today's episode?
Don't do it to me again.
What's the episode today?
Don't do it like that.
The
comparison trap.
Yes, the comparison trap. Thank you so much for helping me there. I have done so much work on comparison since I realized that we were doing this episode and really just reflecting. So need I say, I know you can all join me and say, I'm excited about this episode. I'm excited about it. So let's get into it, Jen. What is your envy, inspiration, temp check?
Envy slash inspiration?
Envy slash inspiration.
That's too... Oh, no. I just thought it was just envy. Okay. I'm going to change course a little bit, and I'm going to go into a stovetop temp.
Okay.
I think one time I did a stovetop temp, but I'm going to do simmering, like a slightly below simmer. So there's a few bubbles here and there, but it's not full on boiling, and it's not just in the heating up phase. It's got potential to go in either direction. That's what I think it is for me, is that because you're basically giving me envy and inspiration, I think that there's always going to be a possibility for me, especially since I have this kind of, you know, proclivity to look around and maybe think I want that, or to idealize, especially other situations other than my own. So there's always the potential for something to bubble up. Today I feel good, but there's always the potential for something to bubble. And something can bubble in a good way. It can bubble in terms of, oh, that's really inspiring, and I want to maybe manifest something like that for myself. And then it can also bubble in the form of almost like a fear of missing out, or a favorably comparing someone else's situation to mine when maybe I don't know that much about it. And maybe that wouldn't even be suited to me. It's just very tempting for me to go into grass is greener, as we all know. What about you?
I have a whole thing about this. I feel that my temperature here for my, I think, 4 or 5 week streak, I want to say, is perfect here, only because there's been so much work in this area. I'm very clear that comparison is the thief of joy. Someone said that. And it's funny because I looked up, I use that quote a lot for my kids, for my children. My kids always repeat to me things that I've said for years, like, you can tell a lot about a person by what incites their laughter. And I feel like back in the day, we understood, we knew where quotes originated from. But now, in this age where there's so much information and there's so much just stealing and, you know, what's the word I'm looking for when you copy someone else's work? What's the word? Plagiarism. When there's so much of that going on now, you don't know where anything originates anywhere. You would have to literally go to a quote site and see who said it. So I don't know if it used to say Theodore Roosevelt, and it says it wasn't him. But anyway, I believe that comparison is the thief of all joy. And when I learned that, I had to do some work for myself to learn to not compare myself to others in an unhealthy way. And unfortunately, we're just living in an age where, with the platforms that we have in our hands 100% of the time, it's as if we're swimming upstream and constantly triggered by the comparisons that tells us and just pushes the message that we're not enough, right? And so I don't think that I was a person that was prone to comparison. I feel like I was that person that, you know, I danced to the beat of my own drum. I kind of hung out with the underdogs because I felt like I was an underdog. So my friends were underdogs, you know. But I think that we're not naturally just prone to envy or comparison. Like you talked about, we talked about this the other day when I said that if we spent the time manicuring our own lawn, then we wouldn't have the time to peek over the fence at someone else's grass. We just wouldn't have time for that, right?
I needed to hear that yesterday.
Yeah. We're constantly being fed the steady diet of someone else's highlight reel through algorithms that I feel profit from keeping us scrolling and comparing. And so while it may be easy for me to disconnect because I grew up in an age when we didn't have all this connectivity, there's the dopamine hit of seeing what others have. This fake, I feel, mostly curated sense of perfection, you know, that's just a lot of times it's not even real. And even when it is, it's not even real, meaning there's Photoshop, there's all these things, there's renting, there's, you know, Photoshop houses, there's so much that you just can't even believe. And I feel like rather than spending the time trying to figure out if this is real or, oh my gosh, how did she do that? And oh my gosh, she did it at 30, 32 and I'm 37 and I'm a complete failure. And I just think about what I wish young people knew. And that half of the stuff that they're consuming isn't even real. And the platforms are profiting from their insecurity. If I was to just measure my own authentic, unedited life against someone else's, you know, Photoshopped one or possibly made up just for the gram life, it's just not natural. It's just not natural to compare. And it's, for me, engineered manipulation. And I just want to see us come to a place where we can disconnect from it and live in the moment. And that's a come I always talk about, having my phone on do not disturb or having my notifications quieted. Like none of the apps or platforms can send me notifications. If you send me a message on Messenger, I'm just not there. And I might see it 10 weeks later, you know, when I decide to go on and see what's going on. So it's just, if I had to give myself a score here, I would give myself 350. I feel really good about the place that I'm in. And part of it is biblical. Part of it is the fact that I'm older and I just had to learn to be social before there was social media.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved being an observer. I love people watching. That's fun, but not from the standpoint of my own not enoughness. Growing up for us, it was, we were social beings. If you wanted to know what was going on, you had to go there. You didn't get what someone else's 2 minute or 1 minute highlight reel was. You had to show up. And then if you didn't show up, you had to get all the highlights on Monday. And if you didn't like what you heard, or if it wasn't enough, then you made it your business to get to the next function the next weekend. Or, you know what I mean? It was, we were present. And I want to see that with the young people, just, you know, learn to be social in real life. So I feel like disconnecting for me was easy. Now, the downside to that is that what we've discussed, like not being prioritized when you want to engage on social media because of lack of engagement. But that's a small price to pay for me, for my peace, you know?
Yeah.
So to me, my streak continues. It's 350 degrees and it's beautiful and lovely here.
It's funny because I was, just when you said the thing about being deprioritized, because we both don't really do social media or we're not active on it, I was actually thinking of posting something today because today a very deeply personal episode for me came out. And I was thinking about going out there and being like, hey, listen to this, because I want to share it because I'm proud of it. And I think it's an important part of the healing process to have transparency. And I also think it can give other people courage to do the same. At least that's the feedback that I've been getting. And then I just had to prepare myself as you were saying that. And I was like, are you ready for feelings of crushing inadequacy?
It's,
because
and it's
every time
too
we
much.
Post something, no one looks at it.
I feel like I've been that person that's been confident the whole of my life. You know what I mean? But a doggone app can make me feel some kind of way. And that's not fair. And so if it's something making me feel some kind of way, I'm going to detach from it because
honestly,
you're not good
for me. It honestly doesn't.
Well, thank God for you.
I'm fine with it. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to say, hey, everyone, whoever my 480 Facebook friends are, 2 days before my son's first birthday party had a miscarriage. If you want to hear about it, come and listen to this. And then no one's going to listen or pay attention to it. But I'm so far out of the game that I just want to do it because I feel like in this case, I mean, we have not posted anything to promote the podcast in weeks and weeks and weeks. So it's like, you know, if I don't want to, I don't do it. But it feels to me like if it's coming to my mind more than once, maybe I should
then
do
you
it.
Should.
Because maybe there's some type of motivation of I want to share this because I think it might help other people.
Or maybe there's someone that needs to hear that message.
Maybe someone needs to hear it. Because I don't think you hear a lot of stories of struggling, which is the kind of the thing that's hard, I think, about social media is in people, like you said, they just post
glamorize
their highlight reel. And that makes, it's that thing, compare and despair. And I remember feeling like that a lot when I was consuming social media, is that I would always be comparing someone else's outsides with my insides, as they say. And, oh, this person's on a boat in the south of France, or this person just bought this house. And at that time, I wasn't in a place in my life where I really had very much to be proud of. So that made me feel less than all the time. But then because of the self-awareness of just realizing this is making me feel bad, I changed my behavior and I made a choice not to consume social media anymore. And then since then, like you said, it's been really life-affirming to just know that the only things I know about people are there's kind of two things. So because I do sometimes have to go on Facebook Marketplace or Instagram, sometimes I can always see the first post because they always do deliver that to me and then that's what I see. And I always really enjoy it. And I think, wow, that person's there and they're doing this and that's so great. But because I have a rule with myself, I don't scroll. I never find out anything else because I just think with there's too much. I don't like to have too much information swirling around in my mind. And then with the information that is in there, if you're not close to my life, I don't really need your information in there, like no offense, but I just have already a penchant for overthinking. So I don't need more fuel for the fire. But what I would really love is if we could get together and then you could tell me what's going on with you.
Yes.
Because then I feel, then I do feel entitled to that information. And I feel really good to have that information when it came directly from the horse's mouth, you know? I'm not very visual anyway, so Instagram and Facebook don't really appeal to me in that way. Like, if you, like, wrote a letter and it was, like, a secret letter, like, I would love to get my hand on that because I'm very – or, like, a journal. Like, give me your journal. I'm a words person. So the pictures are not very enticing to me. I think that they're just harmful to me, or they – at least in the past they were, but – now it doesn't bother me. I'll post something to Facebook. If someone's interested, that's fine. And if they're not, that's also fine. But I think that's because the current that runs through my life of information is so incredibly authentic because it actually is just from people I know telling me things about their life. So all the information swirling around in there is firsthand, and that's where I feel good.
And it reminds me of in the past when you said around the time when Uncle Bob died that you were limiting your interaction with people to the ones that you that really filled you up and lifted you up, that really pushed you forward and things like that. And so I can see how that wouldn't work for you. Like just consuming the information of random people.
Yeah, because there's no connection here. And
there's no connection
is something I really, really need. So to get a little bit more in depth about this topic, the backstory today is times when comparison motivated you versus times it derailed you. Do you want to kick us off with something like that?
Sure. So every single time that comparison derailed me was from social media, every single time.
Yeah.
Every single time. Even if I know the backstory of someone, like people that are close to me, and I know the backstory isn't all that great, and I'm watching these highlight reels, and I'm like, huh, right? And it just still make you feel some kind of way. I did not like being made to feel some kind of way from an app. Like, I am very much in control of my status on a day-to-day basis. And so for me, it came off as a distraction that did not make me feel good about myself, no matter how much I was producing, no matter how much I was giving, and no matter how much I was earning. There was always someone doing better, and I could not see it. And I'm a cheerleader. I'm a whole cheerleader. I'm not a jealous person at all. I'm a whole cheerleader. I love to see the people in my life doing well. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it because I just come from the place that everybody gets a turn.
Yeah.
And so because of that, the distraction just came at too great a cost for me. And so I had to step away from social media. And I hung in there. I never really liked it per se, but I hung in there because I was an entrepreneur and I felt like I needed it. And so that was the reason I was there for so long. But when comparison motivated me, or when it has and when it does, I'm the kind of person, I'm very visual. And so I have like these giant, have you seen those giant post-it notes? Those giant post-it or like notepads, but they're from Post-it. And I would write my big notes or write my big dream and put it on a wall. And sometimes I would put a picture next to it. So if I wanted to work on toning my legs, I would get a picture of Serena Williams's legs as inspo and put it on my, I've only done a vision board a few times. And honestly, every time I've done it, everything on there has come to fruition, which is amazing. It's a wonder I don't do it more often, but taking a picture of like Serena Williams's legs and putting it on my notepad, like as I'm working out, this is just her thighs. You know what I mean? And it's like, that's what I want. And or like, I remembered when I was in the market for a car and I couldn't settle on anything. Like everything I thought I wanted, the more I dug into it, I was like, ah, don't want that. Don't want that. And so I remember being at the car wash with my boyfriend at the time, who became my husband. I think he might've been my fiance, but he became my husband. And we were at the car wash and I saw the Maserati Levante and I was like, oh, I like ye. You know what I mean? I like ye, I like ye, I like ye. And before that, like all the cars I was able to get at the time what I wanted versus, you know, what I could afford or what could accommodate my family. This purchase was going to be about me. And that had only happened one other time before when I purchased my Jaguar in like 2010, right? So this is like 2019 or something. And I'm like in the market for a car. And I think, I don't even remember what year I bought it, but I was looking and I saw this truck, this SUV, and I was like, I like that. Not so much the modifications, but I like this. I like this. And so that sent me down this rabbit hole of research, right? I didn't stop until I found the right truck, the right color, the right modifications, the right price, the right body style. And when I saw it, I knew that was it. And we drove so deep into San Diego to pick up that truck that I was almost at the Mexican border. I'm not even kidding you. But I knew that was the one and I got it. But it motivated me into action. It didn't make me scroll and say, why does this person have that and I don't? Or what? You know what I mean? It just spurred me into action. And that to me is what comparison should do. It should make you go from consuming to creating. It should make you go from this is what I want to these are the steps that I'm going to take to have that or to make that my reality. And that is what it's all about. If you're going to compare, it's like, oh, you have a better way of doing that than I do. That makes me want to learn from you. That makes me want to sit at your feet and understand how you've overcome the obstacles that I'm currently facing. What kind of processes did you, you know, incorporate to make this your reality? And how can I be like you? That's what, to me, it's like, get like me. that way. Like, let me buy your book. Let me learn from you. That's what it's about. That's healthy comparison for me, when it moves you to action and not resentment. And those are my two. Something that sparks desire. Am I using this as fuel, or am I using it to say as evidence that I'm not enough?
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of, that's what social media is for me. But, and not just social media, like even if you're a person that's not on social media, I harp on social media because I think about young people and the messaging that they're receiving and what I would like to see from myself. Like if I was young in this time, what I would like to know, and I would love to see us just get back to connection without comparison, loving who we're with, people watching for the joy of it, for the mere joy of it, and just get consumed with caring for yourself. And remember how we talk about being present in the moment. So even if you're people watching, I love to go sit at the beach and just watch people go by. Instead of feeling bad, just celebrating the best parts of yourself. And I don't know, that's my thing. What about you?
So I have a similar, definitely have a similar experience with social media. So again, off Facebook 2017, when I got sober, Instagram, handful of times posted in the past 7 years. I do think, though, that it's possible that other people might have an okay relationship with social media. I think that the reason that I had a problem with it over 7 years ago is just because I had a really destabilized sense of self. So it wasn't even any particular thing that would trigger me. It was just kind of, you know that book, Are You My Mother? It was like that. It was like looking out there and being like, is this the thing that will make me happy? Is this the thing that will make me happy? I would look at any given person's life and I would sort of put myself in their shoes and think, oh, I must be that. Oh, it must be that. Because I didn't know how to make myself happy. So I would just look at what someone else had and I would just sort of project myself into that or think maybe that's the missing thing. Maybe it's that I don't travel enough. But then what's funny is that then I would sometimes get the real story of that travel. Like I was looking at someone's pictures. They had gone to Thailand and then her sister was like, oh my God, they had food poisoning the entire time. It was they were freaking out because they had spent so much money on that trip and they ended up not being able to do anything. Why didn't you just say that?
Why didn't you share that?
All of us would have felt better about our inability to plan a trip to Thailand, you know? And then there was this one particular time, and this is what happened right before I went off social media, is that there was this woman, she's actually one of my closest friend's sister, and I started just stalking her Facebook profile for no reason. I mean, she's definitely was always a very exciting and cool person. She was that older sister in high school who you met, and she had all these really cool musical tastes. And, you know, when older people just seem so, like, glamorous when you're an insecure middle schooler / high schooler. Just anybody who's older just automatically has this real allure. She always stuck in my head. I'm actually really close with her now. It's weird. Like, 15 years later, we became friends. But I was looking at her Facebook profile, and you know how there's just a compulsive, reflexive action to clicking. So you click into their photos. I don't know if this is still how it is, but then you would hit the arrow, and then you hit the arrow again, and then you hit the arrow again. And all of a sudden, everything was going backwards in time, because you know the pictures are going backwards if you're clicking right. So it's like, here she is, and now her kids are getting younger, and now she's pregnant with this one, and now she's, you know, getting married, and here's now her engagement photo shoot, and now here she is graduating from law school. And like an hour passed by and I had just gone picture by picture, probably 400, 500 pictures deep through her life in reverse chronological order. And thinking about all of that info that was just added into my little mind, which was so fixated on compare and despair. And I just started thinking, is that what I should have done? Should I have become a lawyer? Should I have moved to Colorado and met a man there? Should I have had kids and gone the more traditional path and gotten engaged and had kids? I did end up having kids later, obviously. But I think it was just that question mark of would I be happier if, you know? And so it was really quite indiscriminate the way I would compare and despair. It could be a boat, but it could just be a different lifestyle than me. And so success would definitely trigger it. To some extent, money or buying a house would, just because whenever anybody would buy a house, that would make me feel really behind the times. So similar to you, the people that I wasn't connected with, who I had no, there was no counterbalance of what are you struggling with? And you know, my favorite question for everybody I'm talking to is, what are you struggling with?
Yes.
You know, I love to get deep with people. I like to figure out, if you don't have to be struggling, but what are you working on then? You know, I don't know. Let's talk about it. So
it's not trauma bonding.
Yeah, I mean, I really hate the word trauma. I stay very far away from the word trauma. I think it's such a gray area. Like, if it was traumatizing to me, should that count as trauma? Like my therapist said, if it's traumatizing to you, it counts as trauma. But that seems to really undermine people who've gone through actual trauma, or people that are like refugees or have had like a really serious occurrence of something. You know, I don't know. I just don't know how to use
levels.
That word.
There are levels.
Yes,
but
there are
some
levels,
people
but
use it to talk about biting their tongue or biting their cheek, yes, when they're chewing gum. So I get
what
it.
Is the definition? Is it traumatizing to you, or is there any objective measure of trauma? It just, I something about it like rubs me the wrong way for some reason. So I still suffer from that, by the way. So I've cut out the behavior of scrolling. I don't do that, but I think it's particularly triggering to me in terms of anything that could represent a parallel life. Like I told you how my sponsor says, I always think there's a parallel life. So I'll give you an example. One time I met Kristen Stewart or I didn't meet her. She was at the same bar as me in LA. I was with my guitar player, Dan, and Kristen Stewart was just there. And her and I were just making all this eye contact, and it was just really weird and kind of flirty. And she had just come out, and like, I just never did anything about it. I was just there with other people, but it was just this really weird situation because it's like, am I in Twilight? Like, what's going on here? And then we left. And then when I went home, I just went into this total tailspin of like, I should have married Kristen Stewart.
Wow.
Like, in what world was that even going to be a possibility?
Right.
But in my head, I was like, you messed up. This was your future. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really the biggest carrot that could ever be dangled, because what I always thought I wanted when I was thinking about a future partner was I wanted someone who was a real mover and a shaker, who already had incredible success and who was going to bring me into all these worlds, these exciting worlds. So possibly someone who worked in the entertainment industry, because I was entertainment industry forever for my whole, I'm not even going to say career, because I, you know, had a series of jobs, but I was always in the entertainment industry until recently. So I always thought, well, I'm going to meet some person, like, again, with the just thinking someone else was going to fix me or something else was going to fix me.
Yeah, so it's like, you really weren't already enough just as you were.
Yeah, of course I wasn't.
To a point where if I improved on these couple of things, then I'm at my level of enoughness.
Oh, I was so far from that, because I didn't have any sense of what even mattered to me. I had no sense of even the most blurry outlines of what could even possibly be my value system. I had no idea what even my strengths or my weaknesses were. All those things came to me through doing this work, for me, the 12 steps, but for doing the work on myself, I just had no idea what was important to me or what mattered or what, you know, I think just value system. I always just keep going back to value system, and I know I kind of beat it to death, but knowing my value system has clarified for me how I want to move, you know, and who I want to be. So I didn't have any of that at the time. So I was just drifting. And it's so crazy because I was talking to my brother this weekend. We had this really wonderful weekend. We did this Indian bracelet ceremony called Raksha Bandhan. It's where you tie bracelets. The women tie the bracelets around the men's wrists, and they give them blessings. And it's just a very beautiful ceremony. And we always do it every year. And we did that this year. And my brother came too. And I just had this chance to really dig deep with my brother, and we were just talking about my thinking that something else, it's not that it's going to fix me because I do feel whole, but still thinking that something else would be better. And I still fall into that. So he was basically saying, he was saying the word disorder, actually. He was saying the word attachment disorder. And I was thinking, this is accurate. And I need to dig a little bit deeper into that, because I think that I have that disrupted sense of attachment from just my formative influences. Like, you know how I attach myself to other people's parents, or I attach myself to whoever. So I think I have this sort of drifting attachment style, and that's why I want to look into attachment styles, because I'm interested in stuff like that. I like pop psychology and all that stuff. I don't know how legitimate it is, but I would love to do an episode on attachment styles, because it's just been making me think a lot about why, in spite of all this work that I've done, because there's been positive influences too, just to throw in a couple of the positive ones. When I was still very young and living in New York City in Manhattan, I met this woman at this bar in the West Village, and we became really, it was a hookup, to be completely transparent, but it was a really great, just like a summer fling. And she was a professional surfer, and she looked exactly like Pink. I realize I mentioned Pink a lot in this podcast. Pink kind of is, to me, the epitome of female beauty, because she's kind of androgynous, and I really like that look. You know, like, she's not really traditionally feminine, but she's incredibly beautiful, but she's strong and edgy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So she looked exactly like her. She was really hot. And she changed the whole way that I looked at the world, because she was a professional surfer and she traveled for a living and she had endorsements from different companies, and that's how she supported herself. And she competed. And after we hung out all summer, you know, we were in all these really fun situations all summer. And then she flew off to the Canary Islands for her next competition. And she was from Australia also, just to add in an amazing accent. So you would have thought, well, maybe that would have made me feel defeated, especially as such a lost 20-something. But actually, it was incredibly inspiring to me. I thought, you know, I can be anything. That's how she made me feel. She made me feel like the possibilities are endless. You can have anything you want. You can make your life anything you want. And my friend Meryl is also like that for me, because she has made herself a life where she's gainfully employed, but not super, she's not too much identified with her work. Like she doesn't kill herself over her work, or she's not always stressed out by her work, but she has this freedom and this flexibility and this joie de vivre where she's really enjoying her life, and she has a really beautiful, unbelievable life, but she doesn't seem too tethered to the act of making money, you know?
Right.
And I've taken a lot of cues from her in a lot of different ways for non-attachment and for living in the moment and just for a more unconventional attitude towards life. She's incredibly confident. She doesn't really question herself. And so those things have all been aspirational for me. And so there's been a lot of examples, too, of ways that instead of me reaching for something that's not near me, like something via social media where it's like, you don't even live in the same city as me. We've never spoken, or we don't speak, that's toxic to me, because I can project any number of fantasies onto you or your situation. But when it's someone who I'm directly involved with, it tends to go more the inspiring route. But I am saying, because I want to bring humility into this, that I can also still very easily fall into this idealization of both people and situations that makes me feel very unsettled.
So then I have a question. So what's the difference? Like, what's the line, or what's the difference between celebrating someone's success and using it as fuel for your own inadequacy or perceived
inadequacy? I don't think they can coexist personally, not to a really great extent. I mean, because I think if I'm feeling inadequate, I can't authentically give at the same time. Like, my inadequacy manifests as selfishness. It's mm-hmm. hard. I mean, obviously, I might go back and forth between, but I remember, so there were these people that I went to college with that had unbelievable musical success. They got signed to Columbia Records and took off. You know, they were playing stadium shows, and I was adjacent. You know, we had the backstage passes and we went to go see them, and we had got to have that experience of people being like, how did you get in there? And people just like trying to get close and stuff. It was weird mm-hmm. to experience fame that close up. But it was really debilitating for me because I wanted to do music. And so it was, I was completely consumed with jealousy. And I could say I'm happy for them, but mm-hmm. I was consumed in self. So how honest is that for me to say I'm happy? I wouldn't want anyone to be happy for me while it's taking them down.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the kind of shared happiness that I would want. So maybe I answered too quickly to say that they're completely mutually exclusive. Maybe there can be a little bit of mixing there. Like there can be some like dialectical quality of like, I'm happy for them, but also I'm feeling bad about myself. But I wouldn't want to be the source of anybody else's feelings of inadequacy.
And so for me, I can celebrate, I can see that and go, huh, I'd like to be better in that way. And what steps would I have to take to make that so? I wouldn't have to necessarily achieve their level of success, but to my own level of satisfaction where I don't feel inadequate here. You know, so for me, I always look at these things in a way that spurs me to action. Like if it's really like, okay, so say if my stuff is usually around how I look, right? So for the first time, I've said this before, how I liked how I looked with clothes and without clothes for years and years, right? Mm-hmm. That was just my thing. I was just comfortable in my skin. And then when I got to the place that I would look at myself and go, oh, that's not cute. Oh, that's not cute at all, right? Then that made me get into action. So what happened was I didn't get to complain about something that I wasn't working on. And that was one thing, the rule that I created for myself. You don't get to complain about it if you're not actively working on it. And then when you're actively working on it, guess what you're not inclined to do is complain about that thing because, okay, eventually this is going to come to an end, or I'm doing the best that I can. And so I'm satisfied with where I am right now. Make sense?
Yeah.
So it didn't cause me to complain. It kind of spurred me into this place where it was like, I stopped looking at it as an inadequacy. I may not have her legs, or I may not have her waistline, or I may not have his level of success. But remember, we were talking a couple episodes ago about your level of doneness. That's what I'm talking about. And that can exceed past how you look. It's how you're experiencing life. It's how you're perceiving your work. Like if I'm doing the best I can at work, even if I'm not the star pupil here, you know, I'm doing my best. And so I'm good. You good? Because I'm good. And I can celebrate you as the star pupil.
Yeah, you've introduced a layer of accountability into like laws around, are you allowed to be jealous? That depends. Are you working on it? And then as soon as you're working on it, you've taken personal responsibility for getting yourself there to the extent it's possible to get there.
Mm-hmm.
There's this one line that I always think about. It's this description of this businessman, and the word is lolling. I don't know really what that even means or if I'm pronouncing it right, but it's like lolling around in the Florida sunshine, complaining about the sad state of the nation. And that just, for some reason, just resonates with me because it describes a lot of what I've done, which is just to sort of stand around on the sidelines, not taking any action, and just lament how the world is so terrible or my life is so terrible. I mean, obviously, this is not recently, but without taking any action. So I think it's really you holding yourself accountable is the difference. It's not just about self-pity. It's about Is there something I can be doing that's going to make me feel empowered in the pursuit of this? And if there's not, you got to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Is this our life focus question? Are we in
Yeah, no, not yet. But okay. Not yet. Well, kind of. Let's just go ahead and say we're in it. The life focus question is using others' success as fuel rather than poison. And so when I think about, you just made me realize with your statement how much, you know how I always talk about loving the word accountability. But I feel like in my mind, I had it, I perceived it as a fragmented thing, like it was all about productivity. But what I'm learning over these last several episodes is that it really has bled over into every part of my life. In the last couple of weeks, we've talked about how we show up as women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Back in the day, women showed up. We put ourselves together. Today, it's kind of like haphazard. People can go into Walmart without bras, even though they're a G cup.
G-cup.
And that would have just never happened 15 years ago. You know, it just wouldn't have happened. Like, we would have never been that level of free, air quote free, to just walk out of the house like that. And we've been talking about just being the best version of ourselves, putting ourselves together to our own personal levels of doneness. We've talked about self-awareness and getting back to the point of having pride about how you live and how you present yourself to the world. And I think taking care of business is a full-time job, which makes comparison unlikely. Like, if I'm so busy taking care of all these aspects of my life, like, being me is a freaking full-time job. I don't have the time to worry about what you're doing in your home with your man and your kids and your friends and your, like, yes, there's some aspirational qualities there. Like, yes, I want to have that kind of community around me. Yes, I have to be more intentional about that. But to the point that it makes me feel bad about the way that I'm moving about the cabin of life right now, not so much. And it's because I'm actively working on every aspect of my life. And if I could get one message to young people, that's what it would be. So for you, like, how have you used other success as fuel rather than poison?
Well, number one is just I stopped being on social media. So I don't know if that's something that would be a possibility for this upcoming generation, because I don't know whether they have strong social ties that are in person or not. You know, maybe this is now the new way of communicating, and maybe they feel really left out if they aren't with their friends. Maybe if your friends are over here, that's where you want to be, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So then I don't know how one would navigate something like that, but I would certainly encourage trying to find more things that are in person, and even if it means maybe making different friends, because there's something that is so enriching about in-person communication, and it's really difficult. Like, I remember moving to so many different cities and just not being able to find connections and not being able to connect, and it takes a really long time, and it's really hard to make friends as an adult, and there's kind of this dance when you're meeting new people. Like, there's this one woman who lives in my neighborhood, and she invited me over to her house, and she has kids my age, and, like, I'm not, like, super interested in other moms, honestly. Like, I don't know why. I just, like, don't really feel like I need any new friends. But I was like, what the heck? Like, we'll go over there or whatever. And then I invited her to come to my house just to be kind of polite, because we live in the same neighborhood and kids the same age and whatever. And she was basically like, yeah, no. Like I think she's just not interested in me at all. And and that's completely fine. I don't honestly care, but it's, or maybe I'm also just misinterpreting it, because it's actually funny, because I see her at the gym all the time and I'm like, hey, so that's awkward. But it's hard, because sometimes people are signaling you no, and then you can't figure out, like, should I pursue them? How do I pursue them? Mm-hmm. It's just hard. So I just identify with anybody who's in that situation of trying to make in-person friends, because it's hard to figure out, like, are people even available for this? Are they interested? How do I follow up? I don't want to seem desperate. It's just weird and awkward. But I just have particular, again, with a word I don't like, is triggers. I do have certain triggers, and I have ways out of it, though. So, so for example, one of the triggers is just, like, this house that I live in. It's, I wish we had more land. We have this very, very, very small yard and this very my neighbors are so close to me, and it just bothers me because I have a huge sensitivity to being observed. So I hate going outside and having there be the potential of someone seeing me, especially because I'm always parading around in my bathing suit 100% of the time if it's over 70 degrees. I just don't like that. I feel so sensitive to anybody looking at me or even just hearing other people. My neighbors, I can always hear everything they're doing, and it kills me because it's almost the same thing as the social media.
Meaning they can hear you.
They can hear me, which is really annoying, but I'm sort of oblivious to that. Like, because I don't really care what anybody hears me say, it's just like, whatever. I just don't think about it when I'm talking on the phone outside. But what I don't like is knowing your kid's diaper schedule. I don't need that information. Yeah. Same thing as I don't need any information from social media. I just don't need that information. I already have so much information in my head. I think I am, you know, pretty ADD about it. Thank you, beloved listener, who pointed that out to me. But I have a lot of distractions already up in here. I really don't need anything else.
You don't need any additional?
No, I don't, because I can barely even just remember to pull the laundry out of the dryer, you know? So my way out of it is exactly what you said yesterday, which is focus on manicuring your own lawn. So taking an action of, hey, let me go get a plant and plant that in my yard and put something I love in there. So yeah, I can't really change the distance of my neighbors, the proximity of the other people to me, but I can change the way I look at it. So for example, whenever I go on a walk around my neighborhood, I always notice, I'm like, wow, our yard's actually one of the bigger ones. Like, our neighborhood, the yards are just very, very small. And ours is one of the bigger ones. So I can just focus on that. And I can focus on my yard renovation project that we're doing this summer. And I can just focus on being grateful. And then within the home, I think my life is quite mundane in a certain way. Like, I have kids and a would-be husband. We're not married, but he's basically my husband. And I've mentioned that he's a man's man. And sometimes I feel like I'm a real outlier to be even questioning where I ended up, but I think just for me, and I'm not questioning it. Like, this is actually the thing that's made me the happiest of all.
Yes.
But it really has. Like, it's just so crazy because when I was getting sober, I would tell you that I was gonna like be this digital nomad and I was gonna find some woman, some dream girl who was gonna accompany me on all my adventures, and I was gonna travel and I was gonna be totally untethered to any type of responsibility. And I was never gonna work an office job again, and I was certainly never gonna live in the suburbs. And what happened is,
your life is all of those things.
Yes, I did. I actually even grew my hair out. I used to have super short hair, and now I am this super heteronormative person living in the suburbs
with kids.
I did meet my dream girl. Her name is Maya, you know, and that's like what makes me so happy is like nothing looks like the way that I thought it would look, but she is my dream girl. She is my dream girl. There could never be another girl as dreamy as my Maya. Like, it's going to make me cry because I love her so much. And Herschel gave her to me.
Yeah.
But then my mind can just as easily flip over and be like, because I've ended up with a man, I struggle with not being able to get my emotional needs met. And I know that this is every other woman's situation. Maybe not every other woman, but I think most other women.
Mostly.
Like, like, thank you for saying it, because I feel like almost bad even saying it, because it's like, I know that most other women don't have the same experience as me having female partners in the past. So it's just been a really big adjustment to like understand that men don't communicate in the same way that women do. But then at the same time, I just have to make choices in every moment. Do I want to focus on the fact that he does not want to analyze other people's behavior with me, which he never will? Or do I want to focus on the fact that like he shows up and delivers times a million as a partner every single day?
Yes.
He's showing up, changing diapers, cleaning this, fixing this. If I want to choose what to focus on, I want to choose to focus on this person who looks at me with hard eyes all the time.
Eyes.
Well, not all the time. That's overstating it. Nobody looks at anybody with hard eyes all the time.
I used to have that.
But I don't feel insecure. And you know, I don't put myself together. So I'm rolling out in like, you know, my uniform is sweats. Like, I am not putting myself together at all. And he's looking at me like, you are a freaking goddess.
But my thing is, that works for you too. You understand what I'm saying? That's your level. You're clean. It's not like you're dirty and rolling out in sweats.
No,
like,
I am.
You're at your level of doneness. That's all I was saying. It's your level of doneness that works for your relationship.
My friend was telling me that her grandmother said that the reason why she kept a man for 50 years or whatever is because she goes to bed with this full face of makeup on. And that is fine, but I'm happy that I can be with someone who doesn't really feel like
doesn't need that from you.
He doesn't need that. He says he kind of likes the girls who wear like the sweats with the Tims and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
My aesthetic works for him. So if I want to, I can focus on, you know, I have this person who's an incredible father, but I think, I don't know why I just won't grow up in that way where I won't like wake up to the fact that it's like, just choose this.
Yes.
I think that I got really screwed over by romantic comedies because I was such a weird, loner, awkward adolescent. I consumed and lived through Sandra Bullock and Julia Roberts and all those 90s America's Sweetheart people. Like, I lived my life through those movies, and those movies didn't at all convey to me that all my needs would not be met by one person.
Mm.
And they certainly didn't convey to me that my relationship was not going to basically be like the height of romantic love and attraction forever and ever and ever, because those movies always
end. Fairy tales.
It's like a dance. Like, there was a dance of them getting together, and then they get together, and then the movie ends. So I've had that in every single one of my relationships in the past, but then as soon as things get real, like, I've been out.
And that's the difference from having a wedding and a marriage. It's the same thing. It's like, after the dance, then what?
It's just, for some reason, I'm just being honest. Like, I can just easily, I love my life. I love myself. I've done so much work on myself.
That.
I've taken cues from everywhere around me. I say, oh, I love the way this person does this. I think I'm going to take a little bit of this. This is when I talked about my friends and how I'm absorbing their spirits. That is, for me, the difference is you don't have to be jealous of that other person. Something you can for the most part, absorb it.
Yes.
And my conversation, just as my last thought, but my conversation with Luke's mom the other day was really profound for me. She doesn't think it was profound, but she just said to me, you know, it sounds like you have a lot of the puzzle pieces of a beautiful life. And I just took that away with me. And I was like, yeah, I don't need to have all the pieces.
No one is going to give you all of the pieces. It's the 80-20 rule. If he's 80% of what you need, celebrate that.
Exactly.
Screw the 20. Forget the 20.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's sort of a little bit of a hole in my wholeness.
I woke up today feeling like royalty. The sky is dripping gold and wrapping around me. Life can be so wonderful, warm and gentle light.
I feel like a lot of my conversation on this topic is geared towards younger people, but even for the older listeners, like the people, the women and the people of a certain age, it's speaking to the younger version of you that's still inside, that still may need some healing.
That's
and
what it
if
is.
If I could give anything, it would be, instead of being an observer, a mere observer, just become a student. Watch with wonder, not with want. And ask questions, research, buy the book, understand, you know, like I said, how they overcame the obstacles that you're currently facing. Because your lane is your domain. Like, that's your spot. And if I could give anything, it would be, I would think about the things that built courage and self-esteem for me. And it was when we were growing up, like, we had to actually call someone's house and talk to their parents.
Always.
We didn't just get directly to the person. So you had to learn how to navigate.
Or their sister or whoever. It happened to be, it was like a Russian roulette of who might pick up
the phone. You had to get through the gatekeeper, right? Not knowing what everyone is doing unless you were doing it with them. So it's like, not, you're not just on the sidelines living this fake version of real life. Like, you were in it. And you mentioned FOMO, fear of missing out, like being limited to what you heard on Monday. And it's like, okay, do I want to have next week be the same way? No, I'm going to be at the function this weekend, you know?
Yeah.
Getting dressed up because you might run into someone, not because you want to post something.
Yeah.
It's because this is how you want to present to the world or putting yourself together, not because you want to post. I think that everything because I want to post is so sad because it's such a filtered way of living. It's like a watered down version of life, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
I want people to pay attention to the muscle memory of presence. You know, just practicing being fully where you are. Me turning my phone off and putting it on do not disturb is that 100% because I want to be doing what I'm doing. I want to be thinking about what I'm thinking about. I want to be present with who I'm with. My cousin has a saying of dance with who brung you. And we know it's not grammatically correct, but honestly, if we came together, we rocking together, right? I'm with you. I'm not sitting here with you wishing I was with them over there, right?
Yeah.
Choosing mystery over constant updates. It sucks too that I'm not present in this moment because I'm checking to see what Willy Wonka's doing in New York. You know, I don't want to know everything about everyone. There's a lost art of wondering what people up to versus knowing instantly. Like, I want to be able to call and say, Jen, how are you this week? Like, what's up? I don't want to see your life through social media. I want to talk to you. I want you to give me, like you said, those intimate, those actual updates, those actual connections. There's something that you do in your household that I absolutely love, which is creating that phone-free zone, that time where you and your man put those phones away and it doesn't creep into your home and personal and private life. That undivided attention is so necessary when you're parenting and when you're really committed to living.
Yeah, it has been really huge. Even just establishing my own rules for, you know, when I'm with my kids, I'm not answering that phone call. And that's been a really difficult one and something that's been progressive for me. But yesterday, someone was calling me and I was just like, this is not a time I can be reached. This is one of the only times of the day I have with my kids. And just to, as a closing statement, because I know we have to get to recipes and wrap it up. For me, what I would want to say also to anyone who's struggling with this or to young people is it really has helped me to bring some level of spirituality into this process. There's this kind of faith that you can have in just the process. And I received this text this morning that said, everything that happens is part of the process. Therefore, what looks like defeat is merely your best interest being carefully aligned. Mm-hmm. So I think we can all look back at times of our life and say, oh, you know, I didn't get that job or this opportunity passed me by, but then something better came along or some lesson was learned or some whatever. So like I was saying, when I was getting sober, I was saying, I'm never going to live in the suburbs. I'm never going to have long hair. I will probably not be with a man. I would never work an office job. Like, that all just sounded so boring to me. If I look out at my entire life, I'm, you know, 40 years of living, right now is the time that I'm happiest. So all of those things that I said I didn't want, those things, it was all just arranged. Yeah, so that I should have them. And then it's like what I want is never right. What I think is best for me is never right. So just to kind of surrender to what is and to believe that you can show up to take the action. But like we said a couple episodes ago, get out of the outcome business and just trust the process and trust the journey and trust that just because somebody else might be experiencing success, like what I wish I could have told my post-college self is just because somebody else is experiencing success in this chapter right now doesn't mean you won't get yours later. Like, everybody has ups and downs in their whole life. And everybody, it doesn't mean they're not going to experience downs either now or later. Everybody's going to have these challenges and these successes. And in order for us to all be connected, we have to kind of celebrate and support and just realize we're all the same. And so I wish I had just been able to tell myself, trust your own journey. You're going to get there.
Yeah. And just for my wrap up, you mentioned, so comparison is spoken of specifically in the Bible. Paul teaches about it in Philippians 4, Galatians 6, 2 Corinthians 10, Galatians 1. And it's all about being content in the state that you're in and not comparing someone else's you know, today to your successful tomorrow. And if I could give anything to anyone, or if I could speak to my younger self, and maybe the younger part of you, you know, that's still listening, I'd say that your worth is never tied to how you measured up, how few mistakes you made, or how perfectly performed you were compared to everyone else, like how perfectly you performed compared to everyone else. The messages that taught you to find your value in comparison were absolutely wrong. Your significance does not increase when someone else fails, and it doesn't decrease when they succeed. Those adults who compared themselves out loud in front of you were working through their own wounds, their own unhealed wounds. And that was never your blueprint to follow. And I wish I knew that. If you're listening and you're still carrying those old inadequacy messages like I did for so long, you have permission to set them down. You were enough before you accomplished anything. You were fixed before you made your mistakes, before you had it all figured out. The younger version of you deserves the same grace that you would give to any child learning to navigate in this world. So stop asking your inner child to prove her worth through comparison, and stop getting off the mound of your life trying to chase someone else's. You're that inner child in you never had anything to prove in the first place. So let's get to these recipes, huh?
True.
What's your signature dish, Jen? What is your signature dish?
Oh, this one's a struggle because I've already kind of done them all, but I have a new signature dish, and that's what I'm bringing to the table today. I've made it actually twice this week, and I'm loving it, and it's just becoming part of my rotation. All the kids love it. Herschel loves it. So this is chicken lettuce wraps, and I do 3 tablespoons of hoisin sauce, 2 tablespoons soy sauce, 2 tablespoons rice vinegar, although I didn't have rice vinegar, so I actually just ended up using regular white vinegar the last 2 times. I'm just working with what I've got. I do a teaspoon of sesame oil. It did. You couldn't taste the difference. And then I do a teaspoon of cornstarch because I do like a thicker sauce. I put a pound of ground chicken in the pan. I chop up a bunch of I do this the past couple times I did water chestnuts and green bell pepper and onions and garlic. So I cook those at kind of different times. Like I basically put the green peppers and the white onions in first. Then I throw the chicken in. Then I'll throw in the water chestnuts and the garlic because they just don't need to cook for as long. I had scallions the first time. That was a really great addition. And then I basically just cook that all up in a single pan. I throw my sauce on there. And then I serve it with lettuce cups. I get this big container of butter lettuce from Costco. And even Herschel, I did. I didn't think he was going to go for the lettuce cup because I usually just serve his over rice. But last night, I did this one. And he just kept asking for more of the lettuce cup. So it was cool. Oh, and I do chili garlic sauce. I do it both. I do a chili crisp in the actual sauce. It's not very spicy, so the kids can deal with it. And then I do a chili garlic sauce, like the same one that makes that Sriracha brand, the one with the rooster on it. I add that on top. And it's delicious. It is so good.
Oh, that sounds so good.
It's really good. And I love a lettuce wrap. It's just really delicious.
Yeah, and healthy. I'm looking for healthier options right now, so that's really good.
And you would probably add all kinds of other vegetables to it.
Yeah, I would. I would love to. I want to do my chicken and dumplings. That is one of my kids' favorite meals. And it's really simple. Like, I do a couple of things. So, of course, you know, if you know Bettina, you know, I have a simple way to do things and I have a harder way to do things. It just matters the amount of time that I have available to me. So the best thing, one of the things that I do best is make chicken stock and or stocks of any kind, even seafood stock. I make it really well. There are 2 ways to do this. You can start it with kind of like a roux, but I'm going to give you the chicken stock way, where I'm boiling my chicken with the trifecta, which is bell pepper, onion, and celery chopped. And I chop them kind of big because I like to pull them out for chicken and dumplings. I don't like to have a lot of things swimming in my chicken and dumplings. So I chop them big. I season it with, of course, chicken bouillon. You know that, right? My go-to for seasoning, salt, black pepper, Cajun seasoning, and garlic powder. I will add some rosemary and thyme fresh rosemary and fresh thyme. And I boil that all up, right, till the chicken is done. And I like to use chicken breast and thighs. Those are my favorites for chicken and dumplings because I'm a breast person and thighs are just juicier. And so, but I leave the chicken whole in when I'm cooking it. And so I boil that up. While I'm boiling that up, this is the easy way. Just take a box of Bisquick, and for the biscuit recipe, mix up the biscuit recipe. Lay some parchment paper out on your biggest surface, whether it's your kitchen table or a countertop, and you lay some flour down, put some flour down on the all-purpose flour down on the parchment paper, and then you have a big dollop of your biscuit mixture, and then you put some more flour on top and you take a rolling pin. Flour the rolling pin, and then you're starting to roll it out, and you roll it out. So now that my chicken's done, I've rolled out my dumplings. I am pulling I take a strainer, a ladle with holes, and I'm removing the bell pepper, onion, and celery parts, as well as the stems from the rosemary. And then I'm removing that stuff. And then I also take my chicken out and shred it with two forks. Sometimes you can cut it. It depends on how chunky you like your chicken, but you're talking about really, really amazing flavor on your meat. And then from there, you add your some mixed vegetables. I add some frozen mixed vegetables to the mixture. I put the chicken back in there. And then I'm slicing the dumpling. So now that it's rolled out on the counter, I'm just taking slices and dropping them into the hot stock, the chicken stock. So the chicken's in there. You got your vegetables in there. It's all flavored up really well. And then after I get all of my dumplings into the pot, I add some heavy cream. Add some heavy cream, mix that all up, let it cook for about 10 good minutes till your dumplings are kind of surface to the top. Just kind of keep stirring and letting them get done. And you can serve it as a soup. You can serve it over rice. And if you're really fancy, you can serve it with my famous garlic bread and just go to town with that thing. But chicken and dumplings is something that we love. It's great for a warm day. It's very filling, but it's not that heavy meal unless you want to be fat and eat two bowls. But put it together and enjoy.
Yum.
It's easy.
I'll take that next time you come over.
Yeah, I will. I will make it. I was going to surprise you and come to New York this week. That's why I didn't say anything, because I wasn't sure I could make it happen. But
that would be adorable. Oh my gosh. Come next week.
Okay, so yeah. So this has been yet another amazing episode of What's the Temp podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, and be great on purpose.
Have a great 24. Peace.
Bye.
I woke up today feeling like royalty. The sky is dripping gold and wrapping around me. Life can be so wonderful, warm and gentle light. Nothing's gonna bring me down. I'm feeling so divine.
I'm feeling the vibes. I feel like it's more than just a feeling, what we could define. Let's break through the ceiling, see what limits that we could defy. Cause I could do anything I want, it's for me to decide. Bring you up to speed, take the wheel, let you drive. It's alright on a dark road, let the fire in us be the light. Day and night, yeah, we only seem to free our mind at night. That's just life, that's just how we pay the price.
I woke up today feeling like royalty.